this is Krista, and welcome to this week's Travel Talk. A big thank you to the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired for the opportunity to host this show, now my third episode. Thanks also to Purple Planet Music for our theme song. I have some very fun stories in store for you this week, including how to cut your airport arrival time as close as possible. If you're like me, you like to push it to the limit to see how late you can leave for the airport. So that's a good one from the Washington Post. And another from the New York Times, a guide to surviving your next beach trip if you hate the sand. And I know a lot of people aren't fans of the sand, but love the ocean and the water and to hear that wonderful sound. So some tips about that, and also how to avoid passport mistakes. I just renewed my passport in the past year, and it was an interesting process, so I'm excited to hear about those as well. And if we have time, we'll have some under-the-radar destinations around the globe that are surprisingly family-friendly. So let's get started. How to cut your airport arrival time as close as possible. And this was from the Washington Post, July 3rd. It was written by Natalie Compton. And she says, I should have known better than to let my friend, travel journalist Brad Jaffe, choose the time we left for the airport. But we were on his home turf and leaving before the sun came up. And who can think properly before dawn? Wasn't that the truth? Our car was weaving through upstate New York toward JFK when I checked my boarding pass on my phone. Then my heart stopped. We were going to be late to the airport, by my standards at least. We'd be arriving with less than an hour to spare before boarding. I panicked and turned and told Jaffe my discovery. Wait, don't you have TSA pre-check? He asked, justifiably confused. Both of us being travel journalists, one would assume we knew every hack in the book to make air travel more efficient. With great shame, I told him no and ultimately joined a long line of amateurs while Jaffe disappeared quickly past security. I made the flight but vowed to do better next time. How early or late a traveler gets to the airport is a polarizing topic. An article in The Atlantic on the two types of airport people caused the internet to erupt with passionate responses. People who love to be late stood their ground, while those who swear by arriving early cried out in horror at the other camp's ways. I've never been called a monster more vehemently than when I talk about my airport habits, says Michelle Yee-Hee Lee, national political enterprise and accountability reporter for The Washington Post. Lee is such a devotee to the practice of lateness that she's just made a hashtag out of it, and it's hashtag team just in time. For Lee, this behavior isn't a flaw, but a carefully crafted skill that took years to develop. I travel a lot for work and for fun and for volunteer work that I do, she says. Over time, I developed ways to be really efficient with my time to get to the airport. For frequent flyers like Lee, having the least time to spare makes sense because wasted time spent in the airport adds up. Missing or barely making one or two flights a year is worth the 40 or 50 hours a year in productivity that is gained by not sitting in the airport, says Jeffrey Berg, a financial and tax advisor who flies weekly. I don't care what club room or secret alcove you have to do work in the airport, you're never as productive there as you are in your primary workspace or at home. For some travelers, playing the late arrival game is even a thrill. My airport nightmare with Jaffe was not an anomaly. We were actually early by his standards. Jaffe habitually gets in an Uber ride to the airport just 35 to 30 minutes before his scheduled departure. Oh my gosh, that is really cutting it close. If traffic is backed up going into the terminal ring and in LA, this isn't exactly a far-fetched scenario. I'll jump out with luggage in tow, running up to half a mile alongside the line of stopped cars, Jaffe says. Hearing my name on the PA as they make the final call, I feel no shame. I feel like a celebrity. To be clear, risking it this way is a privilege not accessible to everyone. People who often get stopped for random screenings at airports don't have the luxury of cutting it close. But for those who do feel like they can push it, we asked frequent flyers who take a nerve-wracking approach for their tips on doing it successfully, and here's what they told us. And the first one is apply to cut the line. I get that. A lot of people arrive early because security can be unpredictable. But since I have TSA PreCheck and Clear, I usually get through within minutes, says Andy Biederman, who flies at least twice a month for her advertising job. Not only does the Transportation Security Administration's PreCheck program allow you to pass through security faster, you also don't have to take off your shoes or remove your laptop from its case. There's small details that feel like big wins when you're in a hurry. You still have to be mindful about what's in your bag and on your body, even if you have PreCheck. I don't wear heavy shoes that would make me buzz through the security line, Lee says. She also packs toiletries in a clear bag designed for flying with a carry-on so that she doesn't have to take it out of her luggage. You can apply for PreCheck online, or you can sign up for a credit card that throws in a PreCheck membership for free. Oh. Having global entry will also get you PreCheck benefits and help expedite your customs clearing process when you return to the United States from a trip abroad. Clear, the biometric screening service Biederman uses, gets its own line at TSA. The next tip is download tracking apps. There are apps that can support your tight airport arrival time. Jeffy has a few he swears by, not only for catching flights, but also to make flying and catching connections a better experience. He recommends Flight Aware, that's Flight Aware, to know exactly where the plane is at all times, and Flight View, that is Flight View, to know which gate it will be coming into. Flight Aware, founded in 2005, offers a way to track commercial and private flights in every country on the planet. The app allows you to check delays, cancellations, weather, and more. If you're bored in the TSA line, you can even use the random flight tool for kicks. Flight View is a clutch when you're worried about a connecting flight and want to know if you must catch an airport tram to another gate. Don't overlook your airline's app either. It's helpful to have your boarding pass handy and get notifications about your flight status. Remember that just because your flight technically begins boarding at 3:05 doesn't mean you need to jump up at 3:05. Next is assess departure logistics. It's just as important to have the right apps and line-cutting privileges as it is to get familiar with your departure airport. Feats in tardiness pulled off in Washington may not work in San Francisco. You just have to factor in that specific city's location and the airport, Lee says. Lee considers the size of her departure city, what its traffic is like, how many terminals its airport has, and other curveballs, like whether she needs to catch a tram when she arrives, which you do at the Cincinnati International Airport. She then plans her day to shoot for a gate arrival goal of 10 minutes before boarding. Next is don't check a bag. With boarding passes downloadable to your phone, the only reason to start your airport journey at a service counter is to check a bag. The move takes up precious time that could be spent at home or inside an airport lounge. The type of bag you take can also help in your mad dash to the gate. I usually try to take a backpack rather than a roll-on bag, especially if it's just a weekend trip, because luggage takes longer to mess with it at security, Lee says. Gate agents are more likely to stop you and get upset for being one of the late boarders with a roll-on bag. And if you need to check a bag, try using one of airport's most underappreciated amenities, curbside baggage check. It's free, but you need to tip the porter handling your luggage. Aim for at least $2 a bag. I have found if you tip a little bit more than that, like maybe $5 a bag, it pretty much guarantees your luggage will arrive. Fingers crossed. And then it says, but do review your documents. Jonathan Weber, founder of the internet services company Marathon Studios, sees his last-minute airport arrival habit as an addiction. Some people get their adrenaline rushes from skydiving, and I get mine from sprinting through some airport to gate 53A, he says. Most of the time, things go according to plan, and Weber makes his flights. However, on one unfortunate occasion, he got to the airport and realized that American Airlines hadn't ticketed his return flight to Taipei, Taiwan, correctly. With no time to fix it before the flight left, I got to watch my flight take off without me, Weber says. Telling you to make sure your paperwork is in order might sound as obvious as warning not to lock your keys in the car, and yet here we are. Be relentless, thorough when you read your documents before leaving for the airport. I found myself in tears at the Delta check-in desk inside LAX when I realized my visa for India had expired. The ticket agent informed me I couldn't board without a new one. I had to pay for a new ticket to Mumbai and leave a day later. When you check in for your flight 24 hours before your trip, double, triple, and quadruple check your arrangements to make sure there are no loose ends you'll need to fix on site. And I think even if you're not sprinting through the airport, just being able to leave a little bit later or give yourself a little extra time and not worry is a great idea. Our next story is from the New York Times, and it is called Dreading Your Next Trip to the Beach. Read this. So I will read it to you. If you hate sand as much as I do, we have advice and gear for making the beach tolerable. And I hope you all are going to have a nice beach vacation coming up this year. There's nothing like going to the ocean and smelling that salty air and hearing the sounds of the waves crashing on the beach. And she says, the first time we took our older daughter to the beach, she toddled onto the warm Florida sand full of joy. That joy dissipated immediately after her feet got wet and she realized that sand was wedged into all the crevices between her tiny toes. She spent the rest of the day bouncing back and forth between our folding chairs and a public foot washing station, desperate to get that clinging muck off of her. At the time, I was thrilled. I too hate sand because it's a scourge. You'll find it in your kids' ears and belly buttons for weeks after a single trip to the shore. There are so many lovely bodies of water, ponds and streams and lakes even, that you can wade into without quite so much sand. Why would you do this to yourself? But ponds don't have waves, nor the delicious smell of the salty sea air, nor boardwalks filled with regionally specific treats, a beach lover might argue. Intellectually, I understand the appeal, but I was still chagrined when my kids stopped hating sand and started begging to go to the beach the minute the temperature hit 70 degrees. Because I am not totally evil, I will grudgingly take my kid and her sister to the shore this summer, even though the amount of gear I will need to pack into a car to keep them sunburn-free and occupied for several hours without a bathroom in sight feels overwhelming. Luckily, our pals at Wirecutter, a New York Times company that provides product recommendations backed by rigorous research, are here to help. Kaylee Thompson, a senior editor for Wirecutter's Baby and Kids section, wrote the following tips for surviving a day in the sun with your kids. And I think this applies to grown-ups as well. Sunscreen and insect repellent. If you have a child who will obediently stay still, arms outstretched, while you generously apply a pasty group to his entire body, tell us how you do it. Most of us don't have those kinds of kids, and after tons of sunscreen testing, Wirecutter determined that what's most important is that the sunscreen is not greasy, goopy, or thick, and is easy to apply. A big bottle is also key, since not applying enough or neglecting to reapply are the biggest sunscreen-related problems, according to the experts we spoke with. Look for a sunscreen labeled broad spectrum, with an SPF of at least 30. Wirecutter's favorites are inexpensive lotions from Coppertone and NOAD, although we also recommend the Banana Boat Ultra Sport Clear Sunscreen Spray, SPF 100, as some kids absolutely cannot stand lotions. Think Sport's SPF 50 plus sunscreen is also a great reef-safe choice for ocean snorkelers or for anyone else who prefers a formula that relies exclusively on physical UV blockers as opposed to chemical filters. NOAD also sells sunscreen sticks, which are great for kids like mine too, who prefer to apply sunscreen themselves or to carry something they can easily reapply in their own bag. Sticks also have the added bonus of not running into kids' eyes like lotion sometimes does. It's not a great idea to get a sunscreen bug spray combo, since sunscreen should be reapplied way more often than bug spray, and bug repellents can reduce SPF. I did not know that. Swimsuits, sun hats, rash guards, and cover-ups. Sunscreen can be surprisingly stressful to apply to small children. You'll need to struggle with it less if they're covered up more, so check out the personal recommendations from Wirecutter's editors for kids' swimsuits, rash guards, cover-ups, and sun hats. Because the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends keeping babies under 6 months old out of the direct sun altogether, these are especially important if you have an infant. Wirecutter parents love rash guard-like swimsuits. That's the kind with the little sleeves or the little shirt, which not only protect more of those sensitive little bodies from the sun, but also help prevent sand from infiltrating body crevices. A sandy diaper is a recipe for truly horrendous diaper rash. Ouch. sand toys. Speaking of sand, Wirecutter recommends the Green Toys Sand Play Set, a pail and shovel set that's robust enough to last for years without splintering into beach littering plastic shards. Swim goggles, another thing that can cause summer meltdowns, goggles that fog up, pinch hair, or don't fit. We found kids' swim goggles that are much better than what you'd likely pick up at the drugstore. And both the swim goggles and rash guards, cover-ups, and sun hats, we can talk about in a little bit because that is a hyperlink. Beach chairs. Wirecutter has been reviewing the beach chairs for years, and one of our favorites, the Rinetto Original Beach Bum Canopy Chair, has built-in shade. So that's the Rinetto Original Beach Bum Canopy Chair. If your family is comfortable simply sprawling out on the sand, a small shade tent paired with a blanket or old sheet makes a nice setup. How to carry it all. It's a lot of stuff, right? If you have a car that has room for beach gear, you might be faced with a long expanse between parking lot and shore, and a wagon might not be as ridiculous as it seems. Wirecutter is testing a fleet of them in Southern California this summer, including a cheap collapsible one from Costco and a couple of luxury SUV-like models. Wow. Where I work, we have a nice model that I believe did come from Costco. It folds up and it's been very rugged. If you're trying to limit your load and or are relying on public transportation, a basic tote is a good option. One of Wirecutter's favorites includes an oversized mesh bag with open outside pockets, which I personally found is perfect for keeping sunscreen, bug spray, goggles, and snacks within easy reach, as well as lugging those soggy, sand-filled swim diapers when no bathroom or even garbage is in sight. Then she says, I reached out to Jolie Care, NYT's parenting to goat cleaning expert, for advice on how to deal with my sworn enemy, sand. Here's what she had to say. Sand, it is the glittering of the earth, and it is a mess. The best way to clean up sand that's been tracked into the car or your house is with a vacuum. A handheld vacuum will be the best bet for the car and for smaller messes at home. If your kids brought a sandcastle's worth of the beach home, get the full-size vacuum out. But this is the time to switch away from the standard attachment and either use the hose or crevice attachment. Brush attachments will just trap sand in the bristles and you'll end up vacuuming the sand all over the house. Oh, that is a very good tip. There's a popular hack for removing sand from skin that involves baby powder, but then you're likely to end up with a different kind of mess for your kid to track all over the place. So instead of packing baby powder for your trip, do this. Toss a big, soft, bristled paintbrush into your bag and have your kids use it to brush the sand off them. It'll be fun for them and less work and earth glitter for you. That's a very good idea. And I'll go back and give you a tip about swim goggles for adults and kids. They said, we spent 50 hours using 33 pairs of swim goggles in South Carolina and the Dominican Republic, subjecting them to many miles of pool swimming, hundreds of waves, and buckets of sand, salt, and chlorine. In the end, we determined that for recreational swimmers who want to extend the time they can spend in the water, the Aquasphere Cayenne is the best pair of swim goggles for most adults, and the Aquasphere Cayenne Junior is the best swim goggle model for most kids. And quickly, here are their tips for hats for little kitties. The Flap Happy UPF 50 Plus Swim Flap Hat. For sunglasses, it's the Babyators Aviator Sunglasses. That is hard to say. And they're really cute. They look like just those little black Ray-Bans, just very sort of square black sunglasses. They're very pretty and cool. For swimsuits, the Hannah Anderson Swimmy Rash Guard Suit, which I actually had a suit like that for my son, and he loved it, and he looked so cute. Those are the winners for that. And swim diapers, Bow and Bell's little premium reusable swim diaper. And for shoes, classic Crocs. So for kids. So those are all good tips in those categories. All right, our next article is Don't Make These Top 5 Passport Mistakes. And this is from the website Travel, T-R-V-L, Travel. And it's by Jordan Lawson. These common mishaps could leave you stranded. You've booked the perfect international vacation. Maybe you're headed to a tropical beach locale where the cool blue water pairs perfectly with your umbrella drink. Or you want to dive into history with the landmarks and museums in Europe. No matter where you're heading, one thing is for sure. Without a valid passport, there's no way you're getting to your desired destination. Make sure you're able to cross the border with our list of 5 passport mistakes to avoid. Not checking your passport expiration date. This is going to be a no-brainer, but there's a caveat here. If your passport is going to expire in 6 months or less, you may not be able to enter the country you're trying to visit. That's really interesting. Not every country requires a passport valid for 6 months or more, but of course, it's much easier to renew your passport than to take a chance. Waiting too long to apply. Make sure you've got enough time to actually receive the new one in the mail. For the regular service, it can take an average of 6 weeks to receive your passport after you fill out the application. Other than that, expedited service takes about 3 weeks plus an extra $60 fee. In a serious rush, try the expedited at agency service where you can apply at one of 28 Department of State passport agencies around the country to get your passport in 8 business days. Keep in mind, however, that for this service, you must prove that you need a passport this quickly to apply at an agency. This service also requires you to pay that extra expedition fee. Filling out the form carelessly. Make a mistake on your passport application and you'll have to apply for a corrected passport. Whether it's a spelling error, the wrong gender or place of birth, you'll need to make the revisions before you try to get on an international flight. And even if you didn't make the mistake, thanks a lot, printing errors, you'll still need to get it corrected. The upside, the process is free. You'll just need a D as in dog, S as in Sam, 5504 form. That's DS 5504 form that you can either mail in or fill out online. Not correcting your name after a change. If you've recently changed your name, don't forget to apply that change to your passport as well. You might be able to do this for free with the DS 5504 form, but only if it's been less than a year since your passport was issued. Otherwise, you need to use the passport renewal form, which is D as in dog, S as in Sam, 82. DS82, and turn in a color passport photo, an official document showing your name change and your current passport, plus the fees that go along with it. Though do make sure you're eligible for the DS82 form. Having too many stamps. Just having a valid passport may not be enough. If you're a frequent world traveler, I'm jealous, be aware that some countries require you to have at least 2 to 4 blank pages in your passport. That's interesting. And here are 13 under-the-radar places to plan your next family vacation according to the Travel and Leisure Expert Traveler Advisors. And we're probably not going to get through all of these, but here's just a little taste. Family vacations are often a child's first glimpse into the world of travel. This makes where you choose to jet off to not only important, but crucial for fostering a love of seeing the world. The A-List, Travel and Leisure's group of the world's top travel advisors, understand that lifelong memories are a joy to be made and have plenty of suggestions for unexpected destinations to enjoy and explore. And this is from Jim Agarinos from Perfect Honeymoons. It says, while everyone is standing in line at Disney in the heat, why not be riding horses or rafting through the trout-filled rivers in the great expanse of Montana? After just spending just 24 hours there, I knew Montana was a special place and was already planning a return trip with my family. The kids can learn how to rope cattle, wrangle horses, ride ATVs, and zip line through the forest. The possibilities are endless. Your kids will put down their phones because they will be too busy having fun in the wilds of Big Sky Country. The resort at Paws Up has luxe log cabins, plus the option for families to glamp in luxury tents. It's a way for the whole family to get back to basics, but not give up creature comforts. Another is New Orleans, and this is David Rubin from David Travel. I love New Orleans, Louisiana, and it's a great family destination. Fun family activities include visiting the zoo, stopping by the aquarium, touring the French Quarter, taking a cooking class, listening to jazz on the street and in Preservation Hall, and venturing outside the city proper for swamp tours and plantation tours. Enjoy some of the best food in the world at hole-in-the-wall spots, buzzy new restaurants, or at fine dining spots. New Orleans is such a great city. Julian Harrison from Premier Tours says, Kenya, hands down. An animal viewing safari is probably the best family bonding experience in the world. Both children and their parents are equally excited about what they've seen and experienced, and as a result, conversation flows easily, not to mention that the fact that they get to spend time together over meals with no electronic distractions. Fun things arranged for kids include camel trekking, fishing, hiking with local guides to collect wild honey, visiting a local village to milk goats, and interacting with other children. That is kind of a bucket list item for me. Then Miriam Miller from Mikado Safaris says, "When families come to India, my rule of thumb is the more hands-on, the better. Washing an elephant together, seriously, is one of the most joyous things you can imagine. After that, you can delicately paint your new friend and stroll with him. My families love learning Indian dancing and sitar playing during private lessons. Indian bread baking classes at the Oberoi in Mumbai have also really been a huge hit. Our Mikado India guides have really made astronomy come alive for kids during visits to the Jantar Mantar Observatory. And sari shopping, well, that brings out some spirited mother-daughter bonding." Well, unfortunately, we won't be able to finish this article this time, but we can try to revisit it next week along with some other interesting travel tips and travel talk. I really appreciate you taking the time to listen. A big thank you to the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired for this opportunity. Have a great week, and we'll be back next time.